I'm going to say that Clemson wins. They're going to come back a little bit more hungry because they were so close last year and just came up short. So I'm going to say that Clemson wins it. I'm going to say that Clemson wins. I'm going to say that Clemson wins. I'm going to say that Clemson wins.
And now it's time for the bullpen.
OMG, the bullpen.
It's the bullpen, everybody.
Mercy me, the bullpen.
Go team, go team.
Yes.
Yes, that's right, ladies and germs. As we started out with, that was my prediction of who would win the college football national championship before the season started. Yes, you can look that up on September 9th, I believe, was when that was from. But it was before the first week of college football. And I predicted that Clemson was going to win. Now, I'm not saying that I expected them fully to win Monday going into it. But I had hopes. I guess that was yesterday. But anyway, I thought that they had a really good chance of winning. Did I expect them to? Not necessarily, but I thought it would be a good game, and it was.
Yeah.
It was an awesome game. Clemson knocks off Alabama.
Specifically the fourth quarter, though.
Yeah, the last 4 minutes especially. That game was amazing, down to the wire. It was a very defensive battle for three quarters, really. Alabama was all over top of Deshaun Watson, and he wasn't able to do a lot in the first half. He finally, there was a spark, and he was able to start looking a little bit more like himself towards the end of the second quarter, and they scored their first touchdown, and then they had a short drive the next one because it was the end of the half. But he came out and played really well in the second half, and on the other side, Clemson's defense was playing really well against Alabama, about Alabama's offense. Jalen Hurts looked like a freshman for most of this game. He had a couple moments when he kind of shined. But it was just a good reminder of something that we'll talk about for a second here. I wasn't as impressed with Jalen Hurts as everyone else was. To me, he's a glorified running back. He's not an accurate thrower in any of the games that I've watched. And he doesn't necessarily make good reads when it comes to the passing game. Now, as a runner, he's tough to stop. But to me, that's not what your quarterback's primary thing should be. But I could be wrong. I'm just a simpleton from small town America. But yeah, so everyone's talking about who's the greatest ever, and he's a good player. I'm not saying he's not, but I just don't see him as a great quarterback. And I know lots of people will hate on that, but I don't really care. I kind of called it earlier in the year that I didn't see him as an elite quarterback. He's a great athlete, and he may become an elite quarterback, but to this point, I haven't seen it. And it was more of the same. When you look at his stats from the game, he was 13 of 31 for 131 yards and a touchdown. And that, almost 80 yards of his yards came off of one play on a blown coverage by the Clemson D. So it was really a really, really easy play for him to make. And so I wasn't really all that impressed with him. As a runner, he had 10 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. He ended up re-giving them the lead with 2 minutes left. But when that happened, I said, it's too much time. Clemson's going to win this. And they went down and scored a touchdown with 1 second remaining to give them the lead back. And they kicked the extra point, went up by four. And then they kicked an onside kick and recovered it. And then took a knee and ended the game. And so it was ridiculous, ridiculous end to that game. When you look at kind of the last 4 minutes, there was a lot of scoring. Clemson scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. Alabama scored 7. But two of those touchdowns came in the last 4.5 minutes. So Clemson finally gets the lead with 4:38 left on a touchdown run by Wayne Gallum. But then Alabama has a couple, you know, really good play calls, and they are able to go down. And Jalen Hurts had a 30-yard run for a touchdown, which, you know, credit to him, it was a good run, a really good run. But again, I don't see him as an elite passer or an elite quarterback. But then 1 second left, Hunter Renfrow catches the 2-yard pass. And people are going to be clamoring that it was, you know, a pick play. And it was designed as such, but the defender pulled the receiver to the ground. So he wasn't even able to do the pick play. But the defender and the receiver both got in the way of the other route. So the quarterback had to go around them and couldn't get there in time. So one thing that I was really impressed with was Clemson's receivers. They made some amazing catches. Particularly, it was Mike Williams. It was really good. He had a lot of really good catches. And Leggett was also doing really good. Hunter Renfrow had 10 catches for 92 yards. They had four receivers with 90 yards receiving. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been talking and talking and talking, and Evan's just sitting over there like, okay, let me have a turn. But it was an amazing national championship game.
Yeah, and I would add, especially on the Clemson offense, I think they're the first, from the thing I saw, they were the first team to get 99 plays on Alabama in a single game. I think it was as an offense. But, I mean, you look at the first downs, and Clemson almost got twice as many first downs that whole game as Alabama. So, I mean, they just kept on pushing and kept on moving,
yeah.
Which is why I think, you know, that fourth quarter was possible, is because they just kept moving along throughout the game. But from looking at the last play, it seemed like they had done that same play earlier.
Yeah, they got the other touchdown touchdown in the fourth quarter that way. And it was the same thing, it was a pick play. But honestly, that one was legal too, because, yeah, he bumped into the guy that was covering him, but it was a legal one. And then he just, like, did kind of like a hook route and was standing there, and the defender had to go around him. So it was legal.
But, I mean, I'm just glad they
initiate contact.
I'm just glad they were, you know, had enough in them, had enough left in the tank to go for the touchdown instead of, because I think a field goal would have at least sent it into overtime. But
yeah,
it was kind of exciting to watch them just go for it. You know, you've got 1 second left, you might as well try it now.
Yeah.
And I think it made the ending all the more exciting, is because they didn't just take the easy, what would have been a very easy field goal.
Yeah, and then the thing about that too, as well, is had he not caught that pass, there would have been a second left. They could have kicked the field goal to send it to overtime. But it was...
But you might as well go for it, yeah.
Well, I mean, no, yeah. They definitely should have gone for it what they had. They had, I want to say, 7 seconds left when the play started. And had he not caught it, I think they would have had 2 seconds left when they, like, reviewed it or whatever. And so they would have had a couple seconds. They would have just kicked the field goal, gotten overtime to... But I'm glad they didn't just, like,
TV.
Oh, well, we've got 6 or 7 seconds left, so we're going to just kick a field goal to be safe. I like that they went for it. But at the same time, they weren't necessarily being, you know, they weren't being, like, really aggressive, because they still had that as a fallback. They still had a timeout as well. So if something did happen, if they had someone tackled short of the goal line, they could have called a timeout. So they were definitely taking precautions, and they could have ended up with it, but...
Yeah, and, you know, I've rarely been happier to have been wrong about picking a game, because I'm kind of one of those people that had sort of pessimistically just said Alabama was probably going to win this one, you know, because I don't know why not, but... So, like I said, I've never been happier to have been wrong about a game pick.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. It was actually the first time, I think, that Alabama lost in some situation. I look it up right now, but it was one of the few times that Alabama's lost when their defense is forced 2 turnovers or more. Hmm. Also, it was the first time in 98 games that Alabama lost under Nick Saban entering the fourth quarter with a double-digit lead. Before that, they were 97-0. And so, talk about overcoming the odds. because they were 97-0 on with a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. They had a really high percentage. It was like 90-something in four or five. I don't have that number in front of me. When winning the turnover battle, I just remember them talking about it during the game. And so that was big. And as you said, they ran 99. The Clemson offense ran 99 plays, and that's more than any opponent in Alabama history.
Well, not only that, but Clemson offense also much better on third down conversions this game. So obviously giving themselves plenty of chances and extending their time with the ball, because they also, I think, had something like 10 more minutes in possession of the ball the whole game.
Yeah.
As well, so.
Yeah, they did, and it was impressive. I wish we had the breakdown of, you know, offense in the first and second half, but I'm pretty sure they had barely, like, I want to say probably around 150 yards of offense in the first half, and they finished with 511. So they played a lot better in the second half. But as you said, they won the time of possession battle by 9.5 minutes. Yeah. So pretty good stuff from them. 31-16 on first downs. It was pretty much domination, in all honesty, of the Clemson offense over the Alabama offense. But obviously you got both sides of the ball and special teams and stuff. And so it was a fascinating game. And can you believe how great sports have been for the last year? Yeah. I mean, we had the buzzer beater for the March Madness championship with Villanova winning on a buzzer beater. And then you had the 3-1, you know, fall from the Warriors. They were up 3-1 and then lost. Then you had the Cubs that were down 3-1. They won. So the Cavs and the Cubs both come back from 3-1. You have a buzzer beater for March Madness, and now you had this championship, which was won with 1 second left. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
Probably not going to be topped for a while.
Probably not.
This past year or so.
Yeah. So, in other news, Grayson Allen was suspended, quote-unquote, indefinitely for one game.
Yep.
And that's going on the wall of shame, because that's ridiculous.
Well, it's funny,
because they suspend him indefinitely because he's tripping people, and they let him come back after one game. We think you learned your lesson. Why not just say we're suspending you for one game?
Well, kind of on that, you know, what I would give in the wall of shame also has something to do with Grayson Allen, because the game he comes back against Boston College, it looks like he was attempting to trip again.
It's like,
because there's a guy from Boston College running behind him. He extends his leg in this really awkward way behind him. And they couldn't conclude anything, quote unquote, but
it looked like it, but
it looks
not
a little weird.
It's not obvious enough to be sure.
Well, he's getting better at it. Clearly.
Getting better at hiding it.
He's getting better at it.
Yeah.
So
also, in other news, FIFA will expand the 2026 World Cup to 48 teams. It's currently at 32, which is, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of what's the participation trophy-esque to expand it by that much again. I mean, it's already,
it's almost like one-third of all nations on the planet will qualify.
Yeah, it's just almost like, the thing about it is, like, everyone has a chance. Like, they have all these qualifiers. Yeah. Why do you need to make the tournament itself bigger? It's just kind of dumb in my mind.
Plus, it's like, even with 32 teams, it's the same group of nations that are dominant at this. It's not like expanding it to 48, I don't think, is really going to make the competition any more competitive or interesting. So,
yeah. And so then we have another thing that's in news that's going into the wall of shame is Meryl Streep said during the Golden Globes speech that she gave, that without Hollywood, people would only watch football or mixed martial arts, which are not arts.
Poor us.
We'll take it, you know. If I get to keep watching football and stuff, like sports, and even if I have to give up them and I still get sports, like, I'll take sports.
What do some people have against sports? Like, I don't get it.
It's not an art.
It is harmless fun.
harmless. It's, sometimes it's kind of harmful.
Well, not well, yeah.
It's funny, though. Another thing that's kind of ridiculous is Dennis Young from Deadspin blames the World Anti-Doping Agency's quote, unquote, idiotic war on drugs. He blames them for Trump getting elected. He says they may have helped Trump get elected. And his line of thinking is that the WADA, W-A-D-A, which is the acronym for it, they were terrible for years and years, and the Russians were doping, and then they caught them on these last Olympics, and they sent a bunch of the Russian teams home, and so Putin was upset and decided that they're going to lash out at the U.S. because they were probably, I think it was because they were pushing for WADA to do better, to actually do their job. And so they think that Putin was upset, and that's why the Russians hacked the DNC and John Podesta's emails. But we're not going to delve into the political part of that, but for him to think that...
But from a sports perspective, it still doesn't make any sense.
The war, idiotic war on drugs, because we want people to not use performance-enhancing drugs. I mean, I'm kind of conflicted on it. At times I'm like, might as well use performance-enhancing drugs. I mean, it'll be more entertaining if you can jump 20 feet. But it's a ridiculous idea, and it's going into the wall of shame as well. Also, today... here on Tuesday night, number one, and this is the women's college basketball, number one UConn beat number 20 USF South Florida 102-37.
Wow.
It was close. It was barn burner on that one.
Rally cap time. Rally cap.
So that just shows you once again how much better the UConn women's basketball team is than any other group. It's basically that UConn has like the top 10 players in the country, and then in the rest of the top 100, the other 90, are like just spread throughout all the other teams. I mean, that's kind of what it feels like. They're just so much better than everyone else. and then we've got the last thing on my news list is there was a brawl that broke out between are the Utah State women's basketball team and the UNLV women's basketball team. And I think it was really only a couple people that were actually fighting. I think everyone else was trying to break it up. But there was just an instance where Antoana Robinson and this girl from UNLV ended up getting into it. I don't know what had preceded this, but the video clip starts out with some girl from UNLV gets fouled and she ends up on the ground. And then Antoana Robinson is going to walk past this other girl in UNLV. And she pushes her shoulder into her. And Antoana Robinson pushes her back. And then the other girl throws a punch at her. And so they ended up on the floor. And we had both of those two were ejected. And plus three players off of both teams for leaving the bench. They were ejected. So I don't know as far as suspensions go, but it's kind of funny, kind of sad at the same time. I probably shouldn't think it's funny, but I kind of do.
Yeah.
So that's also some news. You got anything that you want to share with news?
No, I think we covered it.
You're not going to bring up the World Series again?
No, I'll save that for next time.
All right.
Ready or not, here comes the main event.
It's go time.
All right, today's main event focuses on, a couple players and kind of the Aggie men's basketball team as a whole, but more specifically on two guys who've really stepped up, and they're both freshmen.
Yeah.
And, of course, anyone who's paid any attention to the Aggies would know we're talking about Kobe McEwen and Sam Merrill. And those two have done awesome throughout the season, but especially the last two games when they shook up the lineup after our loss to Air Force. And Shane Rector, not only did he get taken out of the starting lineup and Sam Merrill took his spot and Kobe got moved to the one, but he also has seen significantly fewer minutes over the last two games. You know, he went from, I think it was over 30 or around 30 to down to 20 and then 15 in this last game. So he's losing minutes.
Yeah, and I think I believe it was at Air Force when I think he had the ball with so little time remaining, and then instead of I believe it was trying to he tried to take the shot, right?
Yeah, so yeah,
instead of giving it perhaps to a better
and this is just better option. Who he is, who Shane Rector is. You know, he does a lot of really good things, and I whenever I'm talking about him, I feel the need to bring this up before I kind of tear him down, because he does great things sometimes. He knifes through the lane and dribbles through or in between defenders and does a great job, gets to the rim and does a nice layup, and he makes some good plays sometimes. And then there's other times when he seems like he's lost out there, and he does one of those things, but rather than executing it well, he ends up just giving the ball to the other team. And he also makes bad passes at times where he tries to bail out of doing something stupid and throws the ball expecting his teammate to be there, but finds out there's a defender in between him and his teammate. And stuff like that all the time.
Well, I think it goes also for the handling of the ball, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's either – it seems to be two extremes to him. He's either, you know, breaking ankles, or it's just getting taken right back by the other team.
Yeah.
So I think there's also the ball handling issue at times there with, like I said, just the two extremes.
That's the thing. I think he just gets careless or overconfident or something, and he doesn't let the game come to him. And it just kind of culminated at the end of that Air Force game. We were down three with not very much time left. I think we were around 15 seconds. And he was 0 for 3 on the game up to that point for shooting three-pointers. Overall, he was 2 for 9 or 2 for 8 at that point. And so he hadn't really been able to do much on offense. And you had Kobe McEwen, who had hit 5 for 9 from the three-point line. And he had, 7 for 12 from the field. You had Jalen Moore, who was 5 for 10 from the three-point line. And you also had Sam Merrill, who was 3 for 6 from the three-point line. And you had all these guys out there. And rather than pass to one of the guys who's already,
hovering around 50%
from
the arc.
Doing a great job of shooting, and they were kind of on fire in the second half. Rather than pass to one of those guys, or at least try to look for someone, what he did is he dribbled around for probably about 6 or 7 seconds and then launched a very deep three with a guy in his face. And, of course, he missed. I feel like the only times that he makes threes are when he catches it from off of a long rebound or if someone kicks it out. I don't think he makes them off of the dribble very often. And it was just that thing. It was selfish play where he thought that he was going to go and be the man and get the win. And that's fine if he can get it done, but he hasn't shown that ability to close out a game except for one time, I would say. And that was when he went and had an awesome dunk against UVU earlier this year. But as far as shooting his way, he's not built to do that. That's not how his game works, whether or not it's because he's not a fantastic shooter. I mean, he's a solid shooter at times, but I've never thought of him as a pure shooter and being able to just make a shot whenever. He makes big shots, but I just don't feel like he is the guy that you want to be shooting the ball in those situations. Maybe driving, but not shooting.
Well, I think the team as a whole unfortunately put themselves in a very tough position by early on in the game, pretty much spotting Air Force about 15 points, So I think...
They let them score 15 before they decided to show up and
actually
start scoring.
Yeah, and so obviously, the last second shot should have been a better decision. But, it's... You got to give your team better chances than that, either way.
But, it was an unfortunate thing. And Shane Rector, he makes plays like that where you just kind of scratch your head and say, what are you thinking? Why don't you defer to someone else who's got the hot hand? Or why don't you, make a better decision? And he does stuff like this all the time. But as I mentioned, since that time, you know, his minutes have dropped. So the game before that against Boise State, he had 34 minutes, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the next game against Air Force, his minutes dropped down to 24. And then he got benched, and Sam Merrill got inserted into the starting lineup against New Mexico. We started out conference 0-2. We went against New Mexico, and we beat them. And guess how many minutes he played? Shane Rector played.
I'm gonna say single digits.
No, he played 20 minutes.
Okay,
but still, like, it's a lot less. But then against UNLV, who we trashed, you know, he once again wasn't starting. Obviously, they didn't shake it up again. And he ended up with 15 minutes in that game. So you go from someone who's playing almost the whole game to less than half the game. And that's because partly because of when him making those bad decisions, he gets pulled out. But the other part is we have two great guards, you know, that are both freshmen that are doing work. For example, we'll start out with the first game that they shook up the lineup, and Sam Merrill started over Shane Rector when we came back to play against New Mexico here in the Spectrum. And Sam Merrill comes out, and he scores 13 points and has 8 assists. And he played 36 minutes. Kobe McEwen, you know, he ended up fouling out of that game, and he was kind of in foul trouble a lot of it. But he had 18 points. And so it was a pretty good showing, and I think just with the way the lineup was set, the whole team played better. And then this last game against UNLV, I felt like we were really hitting our stride. I think that New Mexico is a better team, and so, you know, we should have beat UNLV by more. But we beat them by 16. And in that game, Kobe McEwen went crazy. Yeah. He went off 10 for 13 from the field, 5 for 7 from the three-point line. And
a lot of it was like in succession, too. Yeah. It was just one after the other.
And the thing about it is he only had, I think, 4 points in the first half. And so he scored 24 in the second half, and he took over. And he finished with 28 points. He had 7 rebounds and 6 assists as well.
I think the best part about that, though, was just the absolute demoralized look on the opponent bench. Like, you could see it. The minute he started raining threes, the look on their faces was that this is over now.
Yeah, and it wasn't just him either.
There was no coming back. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so, and then Sam Merrill, he went 6 of 10 from the field, 2 for 3 from the three-point line, 14 points, 5 rebounds and 4 assists. He did foul out right before the end of the game. But anyway, so you had Kobe went 5 for 7 from the three-point line. Sam Merrill went 2 for 3. Quinn Taylor went 1 for 1. Jalen Moore, 2 for 5. And Julian Perry went 2 for 3. And Shane Rector even got a 3 in there. He went 1 for 2. And so we ended up shooting 13 for 21 from the three-point line for 61.9%. I mean, that's insane. And, yeah, it was just like play after play after play. We were just raining threes upon them. And I just feel like...
Well, it was like robotic almost.
Yeah. I mean, it was insane. And we just kept getting more and more excited. And it just like I looked over every time at UNLV bench after we'd make a three as I was doing the chanting, three ball. And I would look over at the bench. And every time the coach just, like, shakes his head and he's like, what do I do?
Yeah.
I mean, it was awesome. And so part of this, I think, is a benefit of, you know, Sam Merrill and Kobe McEwen kind of getting the most minutes out of anyone along with Jalen Moore. But part of it is I think that the team plays better with that group. Like, I just feel like the offense works better, flows better. Because those two guys, I mean, as I said, Kobe McEwen had 6 assists. Sam Merrill had 4. I just feel like they're unselfish. Jalen Moore also had 4. I feel like they're more unselfish with that lineup. You know, regardless of who the bigs are, you get those three and then the bigs. I feel like they're a lot less selfish when they're that group, and I think that's why they're succeeding. And you also contrast the 61.9% shooting from us for the three-point line with UNLV's 16.7%. It's a stark difference. And I think that part of that is because those guys do a great job defending as well. And Now, I don't think Shane Rector's a terrible defender, but I also don't think he's as good of a defender as, say, Sam Merrill is. And I love having Kobe at the point because I think he does a good job. He actually looks to find his teammates. Now, obviously, he goes and he gets points as well, but he also isn't just looking for himself so much as things just kind of happen for him, and he takes advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the kind of the selflessness of these players. I also think there's a little bit more patience because I think maybe probably what a part of Shane Rector's problem may be is the patience issue. I don't think there's a lot there at times, especially with some of the shots just look desperate, you know?
Yeah.
Like having someone in your face and still trying to make kind of this awkward shot. But yeah, seeing, you know, these two freshmen on the floor, it's a very patient game. They're definitely, I don't think they're panicked at all, you know, which I think is a great credit to them, especially being true freshmen to come onto a court and have that much control over their game.
I mean, Sam Merrill definitely has a little bit of an advantage in that area because he's a lot older than most true freshmen.
True, yeah.
And that he served an LDS mission and he, you know, came back since last year. And so he's a freshman, but he's also older. He's, yeah. I think, 21. And so most freshmen are 18. You know, he's 21. He's got a bit more of a kind of maturity to him. But at the same time, Kobe McEwen also, I think, plays with some maturity.
But the best part is, you know, almost a little bit why I'm sad that I'm a senior this year is seeing how those two, you know, lead the next core group of players as the next few years go on. When you have some of the people that we've seen while we've been here graduate, because I guess Jalen Moore will graduate this year and a few other people. So it's going to be exciting to see that core grow, and especially if they're this well, if they're gelling this well together now, it's going to – I don't know. There can be some really good times at the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, and you also look at it this way. Norby Janicek is a sophomore. Yep. Alex Dargenton is a sophomore. Gore Barnaby, I want to say, is a sophomore. Quinn Taylor's a sophomore. Julian Perry is a junior. So you're going to lose Jalen Moore and Shane Rector, but a lot of the players are going to come back, and obviously Jalen Moore is going to be a big loss because, you know, he's one of the highest scorers in the history of USU, but I do think we're in good hands. We also have some guys that are redshirting this year that I think will be big contributors next year. I thought they could be big contributors this year, but you know, in the long run, it could make a really tough team for the next 4 years.
Especially having somebody like Janicek inside, because I've seen him paired up with a lot of different defenders watching games here, and he seems to find his way whoever they put on him. You know, he gets the job done. So I think it's not just the shooting, which is, you know, I'll take as many threes as we can get, but also it's nice to have his presence inside.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Get over anybody.
He kind of has been less of a factor the last couple of games.
Yeah, I haven't seen him too much lately, though.
I mean,
but when he's on his stuff, though,
yeah,
it's really good.
He was really good at the beginning of the season. He went through a sickness with strep throat, and I mean, since then he's, you know, come back, and I don't think he hasn't played as much, but I still feel like he's done pretty well.
And that just may be a part of the kind of the lineup shakeup, trying to see what will work after starting 0-2 in conference play. So I think once that settles down, we'll probably see more of him the way we did. Hopefully, the way we did earlier.
I think mostly it's matchups. Yeah. If we actually go against a true big man, for sure, I think he's going to get more time. But it really depends on who we're playing. If we're playing against a small team, we're not going to be going – we're not going to be putting him in there as much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if we have to go against some size, you know, that's another option that we have. And he's really good inside. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been the same for the last probably almost a month. For some reason, and a part of that was he was ill, but I haven't seen it since. But maybe he's still recovering. I don't know. Strep throats can be pretty nasty at times.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, that's it's been awesome to see these freshmen succeed really well, and it really has felt like these last two games that they have kind of taken over the team, and that the team is now theirs rather than, say, Jalen Moore's team, Jalen and Shane's. And everyone was excited about Shane at the start of the year. I was apprehensive because, you know, I know he can do great things, but at the same time, it's stuff like at the end of the Air Force that I expect him to do consistently. And so, I like what Coach Duryea has done with the lineup. I think that they're kind of getting a bit of a groove, and I feel like this team can play with anybody. I mean, the Mountain West is pretty wide open at this point. I mean, San Diego State, you know, last I had looked, hadn't won a game in conference. They now have won one. I'm not sure who they beat. I mean, I'll look that up right now. But they started out 0-3, I believe, in the conference. And they beat San Jose State, which they should beat San Jose State because San Jose State's not that great. Their next game is against us, and that's going to be this Saturday. It's in San Diego, so we won't be able to do that one. But we will be playing them here in February. But San Diego State, if you didn't know, they've kind of been the perennial winners of the Mountain West for a few years. And kind of they're the team to beat. But they've kind of struggled out of the gates. Boise State, a team that we honestly should have won against. If we could have just rebounded a missed free throw, we should have won that game.
Well, because we had beat them for a good while before that bump in the road, at least in the past years.
Yeah, I mean, they've been a really tough team the last few years, and they got us one out of the two times. I think they got us here last year, and then we got them there. So it's been kind of back and forth. They're the ones at the front of the conference right now at 4-0. Behind them, you got Nevada and Colorado State. I'm not sure how good Nevada is going to be, but Colorado State, I don't ever see them as elite. They're a good, solid team, but I think that we should be able to beat them. This is the optimist in me coming out, but I really think that they have a chance to compete for the top of the conference this year, this Utah State team. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited about Sam Merrill and Kobe McEwen, even more so than I was before. Because coming in, obviously, Kobe McEwen was a four-star prospect, and I think the first one in school history that has signed here. And he's been as good as we hoped, and maybe even a little bit better. You know, as a freshman, he's coming out and making a huge impact, leading the team and scoring the last couple of games, and kind of taking over. I'm sure by the end of the year, he will have the most points on the team. Currently, Jalen does, but I think that Kobe's really settling into his own. And I think that he will. But that's kind of my thoughts about the freshman phenomenon that we've had. And I hope it continues because it's been great. It's been exciting. And I would encourage anyone who isn't currently going to the basketball games to go because they're awesome.
Well, it's building up a better atmosphere, I think, throughout the games.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
It's been a while since, you know, at least as a Spectator, that it's felt like, oh, the place is really jump in at a game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's good for that Spectrum atmosphere, which I think also plays into making it a very tough place to play for our opponents.
Oh, so. Absolutely. I mean, if we can fill up the Spectrum, I think we were close a couple times early on. We haven't even been close for a little while. I know it's been break, so maybe that's been the biggest problem. I hope next week, we have a couple different matchups next week here in the Spectrum. One of them, we've got one Wednesday and one Saturday. I'm pulling those up right now to tell you exactly who we're playing. We've got, I clicked on the wrong one. Actually, no, we got one next week, and that's against Colorado State next Saturday. And then after that, we play again. The next time that the men are here is going to be the following Saturday against Fresno State, which is a tough team, perennially. I mean, maybe they're not as good this year. I don't know. I'd have to look at them more. But next Saturday is the next home game for the men. So make sure you come and cheer loud and, you know, help help us get the W, or help the team get the W, not necessarily Evan and I.
Although we would appreciate it if you do help us get a W somewhere.
That would be much appreciated.
In some event.
But yeah, I want to thank you guys for listening. That's all the time we have today. Have a good one.
This has been another edition of the Bullpen Podcast on Aggie Radio.
Catch us on aggieradio.com and on Twitter @USUBullpen.